And what the court ruled here was that the alleged underlying legal defects continued to exist.
Ahilan Arulan Antham is with UCLA Law. Now, the judge did leave it in place as it is appealed, which the Biden administration tonight says will be done. The deadline is close as some 150,000 auto workers prepare to go on strike. WWJ Radio's Jeff Gilbert.
UAW President Sean Fain says they will strike any car maker without a contract, but they will pick and choose which plants to strike strategically, then ratchet up the pressure if the strike continues.
This is going to create confusion for the companies. It's going to keep them guessing on what might happen next.
Fain says talks have made progress, but they remain far apart on many issues. Jeff Gilbert, CBS News, Detroit.
After that prison escape and 2 weeks on the loose, convicted killer Danilo Cavalcanti is now back behind bars, captured early Wednesday morning near Philadelphia. CBS News senior investigative producer Pat Milton says he was found hiding in tall grass, laying on his stomach.
He noticed that law enforcement was around him and started to crawl out of the area. And the police gave the command for their dog to chase, grab, and hold, which is what they do.
Visiting Siberia, North Korean leader Kim Jong-un promises full and unconditional support for Russian President Vladimir Putin as the two internationally boycotted leaders met to talk trade, North Korean ammunition for Russian missile technology.
Washington has warned Putin that they are going to be in violation of several UN resolutions, but it would appear that North Korea and Russia don't really seem to care, and that this deal, whatever it looks like, is something that's going to benefit them both.
Correspondent Imtiaz Tayyab. Some of the most famous high-tech CEOs were at a closed-door Senate forum discussing artificial intelligence.
Hundreds of millions of people are already using it, and many businesses have built it into their products. What we don't know is what this is all going to lead to and whether or not it's going to impact people's jobs, their livelihoods, and potentially, as Elon Musk warned, civilization in general.
That is technology expert Ian Schuer, and this is CBS News.
You need to hire fast and hire right? You need Indeed. Their all-in-one hiring platform helps you attract, interview, and hire candidates efficiently. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
Ew, gotta get rid of this old Backstreet Boys t-shirt.
Tell me why.
Because it stinks, boys.
Tell me why.
I've washed it so many times, but the odor won't come out.
Tell me why.
No, you tell me why I can't get rid of this odor.
Have you tried New Downy Rinse and Refresh? It doesn't just cover up odors. It helps remove them.
Wow, it worked, guys.
Yeah.
Downy Rinse and Refresh removes more odor in one wash than the leading value detergent in three washes. Find it wherever you buy laundry products.
We said 1,500 hours.
Dax's hangar flies high thanks to his military precision. He wants to land some aircraft mechanics, preferably with a military background.
Okay, I wasn't aware of a new timeline.
Cancel. Stand by for new assignments.
Indeed can help him hire great people fast.
I need Indeed.
Indeed you do. Our hiring platform instantly connects you with quality candidates, and you can schedule and conduct virtual interviews right from the Indeed dashboard. Visit Indeed.com/credit and get $75 towards your first sponsored job. Terms and conditions apply.
Saturdays at 1, don't miss Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, featuring legendary Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram. Football, life, and fun.
Earl, you've been driving a Yugo. They just gave you a brand new Ferrari with turbo boost. So enjoy it, brother.
Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram. Saturdays at 1 on the Civic Media Network and on the Civic Media app.
Kids across America are going to school hungry. Millions of kids every day. Hungry kids get sick more often and can struggle in school. It can be harder for them to focus and learn. But one simple thing can help change all of this for a hungry child in America. Good healthy food and the energy it brings. With help from caring people across America, No Kid Hungry is providing healthy meals and hope to hungry kids so they can build better futures.
We want to ensure that all of our kids have healthy meals every day.
Thank you.
Thank you for helping feed our kids.
To learn more about ending child hunger in America, go to helpnokidhungry.org today.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio WFHR.
Lows dip down to about 39 overnight under mainly clear skies, southeasterly winds around 5 miles per hour. Bright sunshine expected tomorrow. Highs level off around 73. Lows dip down to about 52 tomorrow night, mainly clear skies. Mid-70s Friday and Saturday with scattered showers possible both days.
For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 39.
This is Matt LePay, and you're listening to your home for your Wisconsin Badgers on 97.5 FM and 1320 AM WFHR, locally grown radio.
Unrelentlessly positive.
Innovative.
Innovative?
Innovative. Whatever.
It indicates.
Indicative?
Moving Wisconsin forward, one joke at a time. This is Kristen Bry with As Goes Wisconsin.
Yada, yada, yada.
Hello, Wisconsin!
Hello, Wisconsin. Welcome to the 11 o'clock hour of As Goes Wisconsin. I am your host, Kristen Bry. We got Jane Matinere on the board. We got Greg Bach here today. And our guest for this first half hour is none other than returning champion Alan Borsick, who is a senior fellow at Marquette Law School and frequently still writes about education for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, where he was a veteran education journalist for a very long time. And we love to get his input on someone who has been reporting on schools and education in Wisconsin for most of your career. Is that a fair way to put it?
Dinosaurs roamed the earth when I started, I think.
And now you can, you know, now they study about them. But so welcome back. How are you, sir?
I am good. I'm really pretty good. How are you? That's what I want to know.
I'm impatient. As far as we are officially 2 weeks away as of today, and I am I'm feeling good though, feeling very lucky. As far as the I have not reached that point where it's like, get this baby out of me now. So I think that's a good thing. So I wanted to bring you on because so often I feel like, especially when it comes to Milwaukee schools, there's a lot of discontent. As far as NPS and the current status of, you know, failing schools, failing kids who are not reaching their potential. And, you know, and I think, as you said in your most recent article, for all that has happened on the Milwaukee area education landscape in the last 35 years, great results have been delivered too infrequently. Mediocrity, or worse, has continued unchanged when it comes to results in many schools. But you highlighted in this same article some examples of schools that are doing really well. And so I wanted to bring you on to talk about some of those and then talk a little bit about what is the common thread between them. And so to start with, you started with Reagan High School, which is an MPS high school, right?
Yes. Not a charter school or anything. It's a part of the regular system.
And so what do you see Reagan doing that this was the first school that you listed as a great example?
Well, Reagan is about 20 years old now, 21 years old. It started out as part of a Bill Gates Foundation funded small high school initiative, which nationwide was regarded as not successful. But there are success stories. And one of the things that happened with Reagan is it started out small and they had a clear idea of what they wanted to do. They had very good leadership. They had a program that parents really wanted, which was an academic. They wanted the roof as king of the South Side, is how one of them put it in the early days. They wanted a college prep school on the South Side to rival Rufus King on the North Side. And there was a market for it. They were doing what parents wanted, and that something that was good. So it began to grow. So suddenly it wasn't a small high school anymore. They like have 1,300 students now. They're putting on a more than $10 million addition because they were so crowded. I mean, this is the most successful development in MPS in the last 20 years, and they earned it by being good. I mean, good at what they do.
And so with that, because I think out of the four schools that you listed, that's the only public school that is not either private or a voucher school, right?
As it happened, I wasn't setting out to be sector sensitive. Oh. But and I've heard of a couple more examples. I may do a second column. I mean, there are a thousand reasons to be worried and pessimistic and to, you know, just throw up your hands. The state of kids in the city overall is certainly alarming. But there are things that are being done well. Among other things, we all ought to be learning from them.
And so one of the other schools that you was the Notre Dame School of Milwaukee. And so what stood out to you about that school?
I was looking for places in this particular column that are growing and that are taking new steps and have earned, in my opinion, the right, shall we say, to grow because they're doing a good job. So Notre Dame started out also as a small voucher school, Catholic school, 15 years ago, I think. Expanded to two buildings. Now they're expanding to a third building. They've earned high marks in the state report cards. They just run a really good ship. Is it a school for everybody? No, it's definitely a straight line Catholic school. They separate boys and girls at early grades, but they do a good job and they're growing. Again, you know, in a parental choice world, which really applies to every sector of schools in town, parents, there's a market for this. Parents wanted good schools for their kids, and Notre Dame has earned a place as being listed as one of them.
And so as far as it being a barometer of who's doing well, it becomes,
yeah,
that's instead of neighborhood schools, it's who, where do you want to go and who's willing to drive across town to get you to that school?
A neighborhood schools is such an interesting question. We could have a whole separate discussion on kind of, I wouldn't say the death of neighborhood schools, but it's a very weak idea in Milwaukee, and it has been probably since the start of bus-oriented school desegregation in 1976.
Is it that long that it's not been, that neighborhood schools has kind of been,
I would
on
say
the decline
so.
In Milwaukee?
I've argued with no data to prove this, but I'd love if someone, I tried to come up with a way of saying this more firmly, that the neighborhood school impulse is weaker in Milwaukee than I suspect in any other city in the country.
Oh, wow.
I grew up, you went to your neighborhood school. Everyone knew that. I know there were occasional exceptions, but they were rare. Now, something like 35% of kindergarten through eighth grade kids in the city of Milwaukee go to their neighborhood school. It's wow. Way under half.
Wow. Well, and that's probably another topic for another day,
yeah,
as far as if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but it is interesting. We're talking to Alan Borsick, who is a senior fellow at Marquette Law School and frequently still writes about education for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. And we're talking about some shining examples of schools that are doing it right or doing well in Milwaukee. And the next one, while not technically Milwaukee, it is Cudahy, which is just south of Milwaukee. And I remember we talked about this previously because Cudahy, prior to any legislation being passed at the state level, was already making the switch to what we've talked about most of the times that you've come on the show, which is switching from whole language, right? The whole language reading method to phonics, which now is where the state's headed again, right?
Well, correct. And it's a little bit broader than phonics, but phonics is the signature aspect of it, what's called the science of reading. And Wisconsin became something like the 32nd state in the country to pass a science of reading law that had some bipartisan support, not a ton, but enough that Governor Evers signed it. That was part of his deal for allowing Milwaukee City and Milwaukee County to have a sales tax, was agreeing to some other changes, and the reading bill came along with it. But Cudahy was in on this early, and the reason I am big on Cudahy is that they really had fairly weak reading scores. It's a community that's not, you know, like a rich suburban haven, very much working class, a lot of changes in the demographic makeup of Cudahy in the last 20 years. The thing that I like the best is, number one, they are taking constructive steps to deal with a problem. That's actually fairly rare in school life and deserves praise. And number two, they're well led. And number three, they appear to have their act together as far as everyone being on board. Teachers are supportive, parents are supportive, the school board's supportive. and the district leadership, of course, is supportive. So they're really working hard at it. And that sense of we need to do better and we're going to do it constructively, again, that's way too rare. And I'm impressed with how they've done on that.
And then the final school that I want to talk about, and then when we come back from the break, I want to talk about what you see as the common thread. Like, is it just money? Is it leadership? Is it bold ideas? And where you see within the confines of school districts and bureaucracy and everything, like what can other schools learn? But then the one that you actually wrote the most about in this article was Aug Prep, which I mean, maybe it's because I don't have a kid of that age yet, but I had not heard of Aug Prep previously.
Oh, really?
It seems like no. Okay. And so tell us more about that school.
Well, it's an amazing story, and whether you love it or hate it, and there's certainly people in both camps, it's controversial. Gus Ramirez, the founder, is controversial. He's the head of a Waukesha-based high-tech business called Husco, obviously made a lot of money, mm-hmm. Driven by Gus and his family, they created the school. Only 6 years ago they opened, so it's quite young still. It's grown very rapidly. It, as of this fall, is the largest single-site school in the Milwaukee area with about 1,800 students, pushing 1,900 students. It's going to grow some more. And they've had great success. Number one, attracting people. Number two, academic success. Number three, some of the things I look for in a school: stability in staff, stability in student enrollment, high attendance, and high scores on the state report card. They had 5-star scores the last 2 years of report cards. And what's some of the traits? Number one, strong leadership. Number two, clear ideas of what they're doing and clear attention to it. Number three, and I've talked with them about this, a willingness to look at what are our weak spots and how do we address them. You know, when we see there's a problem, third grade math isn't going very well, what are we going to do about it? That kind of thing. Certainly they've had the benefit of money because the Ramirez family particularly has poured tons of money into it. The first building they built was probably over $50 million. They opened a second building next door. Now that's almost $50 million. And they're taking over the Cardinal Stritch campus on the north side.
Oh, that's why I've heard that name before.
Which is a whole nother really ambitious idea that'll take years to unfold.
Well, we have to go to a break, so I want to keep talking about this on the other side of what you kind of see as the common thread. Like you said leadership, you said money, and what kind of schools can do with one, with the other, with both, with neither, to try to improve their standing. So our guest is Alan Borsick. Come back after the break. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
Deliver me from the days of old.
Serving central Wisconsin since 1940.
WFHR, Wisconsin Rapids.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry, along with Greg Bach and Jane Matinere, and we are talking to Alan Borsick, who is a senior fellow at Marquette Law School and writes about education for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. And we're talking about what schools are, in at least in Milwaukee area, are really doing well. They're growing, their tests are good, the grades are good, the achievement levels are good. And we talked through some of the highlights of the schools that you had written about in your most recent article, but I kind of want to talk about what you see as the common thread. And I guess the first question is how much, because there's so much talk about money when it comes to school funding. There is obviously do public schools have enough? There is still anger from some as far as how much voucher schools are now going to get in this new budget. But how much do you feel like successful schools need to have a adequate, or if not a more money to be successful?
It's not a simple question.
Okay.
you'd like to make it a simple question, but there's so much evidence from around the nation that, and around here as well, that you can spend a lot more money and get not very good mm-hmm. results. So there's more to it than just money. Do schools need money? Yes. Do schools, especially at the moment, the public schools, are they being stretched and stressed? Absolutely. Did they do well in the state budget? No, not really. The voucher and charter schools did way better mm-hmm. in this budget. Mm-hmm. And the balance of power and initiative and energy between the sectors is changing in a way that is much more attractive to the non-traditional public schools. So that does all involve money. But if you're looking for success, you got to have more than money. You have to have resources. That's a fact. A sense of limited satisfaction constantly, that you can't just rest on your laurels, even if you're doing pretty well. And that's fairly rare. A sense of let's address our problems effectively. That's a really important trait. A sense of not putting up with mediocrity, which too many schools kind of say, oh, well, we made it through today. Strong teachers, strong principals. Principals of school leaders, I mean, principals as far as ideals also, a real focus on the facts of whether are our kids doing as well as they ought to, and what are we going to do about it? These are intangibles, but, you know, if you talk about Aug Prep, they got lots of money.
Yeah.
And that's a really good thing. But they also have that strong, competent leadership and that sense of how do we do better? How do we connect with kids? How do we get students on the paths to success? What help do they need, including intangibles like social emotional stuff? You know, it's not just about learning the reading and math and science. So that the intangibles are also really important. You know, I could name schools around here where you give them a ton more money and you're not going to get any better results.
And is that, because I think that's kind of the question, as far as what is, when we think about some of the voucher schools, charter schools that don't have the bureaucracy of the school district, how much, having never worked in education and only reading things from the outside, like how much handcuffs do MPS leaders, as far as principals of individual schools, like how much leeway do they have to really take charge and like turn their school around versus things that are kind of like school district wide that are just hard to overcome?
It
Another
is
hard
a big
question.
Well, there's no one answer. And in different periods, there's been different results. That at times there's been a much looser central control, and at times there's been much more restrictive central control. These days, I think school principals don't have as much freedom to pick their programs and to lead, you know, to be a maverick as okay. in some prior eras. Frequently, it's been the mavericks who ran the best schools in MPS. Going back like 25 or 30 years ago, there are not very many mavericks in that system now. Frankly, if you're a maverick, you go somewhere else. There's been times, and we're kind of in that now, where every school is expected to be on the same page in the same textbook, you know, every day. And that has advantages and that, but it does sort of sap creativity and drive for a lot of employees. It's a big battleship, and getting it to change directions is not easy. That's just one of their many problems, unfortunately.
So I guess with the 2 minutes that we have left, I guess, what are you looking forward to, not only with these like certain schools that are doing well, but knowing, like we said, there is a new budget, there is new reading legislation. Like, what are you looking for and things that you're looking forward to writing about in this upcoming school year?
Well, that's a good question. I have cut back, I should say, on how much I'm writing for the newspaper, just because I'm old and cranky and worn down. the balance of power between the non-MPS or non-public school sectors and the public school sectors is really important to watch.
Mm-hmm.
As things evolve with the new reading law, that's important to watch. The whole politics, especially in the suburbs, the politics of what's going on and issues that are important and valuable, but nonetheless, oftentimes not really central to how kids are doing in school. I wish parents and teachers and everybody was focused more on how do we get better outcomes for our kids. So those are the kind of things I'm watching.
Some little things, just little details.
but those are also often the ones that school districts don't focus on. That.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, Alan Borsick, always a delight to have you here. I will see you when I get back from maternity leave. Jane and Greg will probably have you back while I'm gone. But have a great day and always appreciate having you here. We're going to take a break. When we come back, what are the worst mistakes in television history? We want to hear from you. 844-967-2789. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
Locally grown radio from Vesper to Plover, we are your home for news, talk, and sports. 97.5 FM and WFHR, 1320 AM.
Locally grown 1320 AM and 97.5 FM WFHR programming is broadcast from the Bug Tussle Studios.
Bug Tussle, keeping you connected to the world around you.
Today's job market is full of demand for skilled trade workers. Electricians, welders, mechanics, these and other trades are the backbone of every community. They're also a huge part in making sure the Army National Guard is always fulfilling its mission of service to our country and communities. Soldiers train to keep the power flowing, engines running, and supplies moving. The skilled trades these soldiers perform are the same ones needed in today's civilian workforce. Army National Guard soldiers are on the fast track to learning skills that can set them up for success at home with companies looking to hire the best. With options from plumber to helicopter mechanic and everything in between, soldiers are able to select the trades that best fit their lives. Their resumes are being built through their paid training and part-time service. Find out how you too can learn a trade profession and serve your community and country by visiting NationalGuard.com. Sponsored by the Wisconsin Army National Guard. Aired by the Wisconsin Broadcasters Association and this station.
James here, host of the new Sunrise Show on Wis Country 105.5 WIRI. We're on the air live every weekday from 7 to 8 a.m. to start your day right with...
More Garth. More Reba.
Winona.
Yeah, but also the National Day of Calendar.
Brooks and Dunn.
Country news.
Brooks and Dunn.
This day in country history and your requests, plus the country legends.
More Garth. More Reba.
That you know and love. It's coffee, conversation, and country. Every weekday from 7 to 8 on 105.5 WIRI, Wis Country.
Winona.
Daisy was abandoned by her family and placed in foster care at 15 years old. Her life was full of uncertainty. She thought she'd never have a permanent place to call home.
Before I was adopted, I felt like I wasn't enough. I had this hole in my heart, and I never knew what I needed to patch that hole. But when my mom asked to adopt me, that hole was closed. It feels so normal now to say that I'm a part of this family. I am surrounded by love. I feel safe. And that hole inside of me is gone. I am whole. I'm finally enough just as I am.
The Dave Thomas Foundation for Adoption is changing the lives of teenagers at risk of aging out of foster care. Like Daisy, every child deserves a permanent, loving home. You can help. Learn more at DaveThomasFoundation.org.
Wisconsin enjoys a rich history in broadcasting, which we celebrate at the Wisconsin Broadcasters Hall of Fame. I'm Michelle Betterkind, president of the WBA. We honor those who have devoted their careers to serving their local communities as legendary broadcasters. They are personalities, owners, engineers, and educators. It's an experience that's free for all to enjoy. visit the Wisconsin Broadcasters Hall of Fame, located inside the Milwaukee Hilton City Center.
Hi, I'm Ryan Blaney, a third-generation race car driver, and we dedicate a lot of our time to going as fast as possible. My Grandpa Lou is the reason why my dad and I started racing, and I'm really proud to follow in his tracks. But when my grandpa was diagnosed with Alzheimer's, it was a very unexpected bump in the road for us. I've learned a lot on this journey with my Grandpa Lou, and the memories of my grandpa will always be with me. It's important to notice if older family members are acting differently, experiencing problems with their memory, or having trouble with routine tasks. Talking about Alzheimer's can be really tough, but if you notice something, have a conversation with your loved one. Encourage them to see a doctor or offer to go with them. Early detection of Alzheimer's can give your family time to explore support services, make a plan for the future, and access available treatments. The Alzheimer's Association provides care, support, and research to help you take control of the situation with your family and manage the disease together. If you or your family are noticing changes, it could be Alzheimer's. Talk about seeing a doctor together. Visit alz.org/time-to-talk. A message from the Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio WFHR. Lows dip down to about 39 overnight under mainly clear skies, southeasterly winds around 5 miles per hour. Bright sunshine expected tomorrow. Highs level off around 73. Lows dip down to about 52 tomorrow night, mainly clear skies. Mid-70s Friday and Saturday with scattered showers possible both days. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently it's 39.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. Jane Matinair is on the board. Greg Bach is here. And let's get away from the politics. Let's get away from schools. Let's have some fun and talk about the worst decisions in TV history.
So this article came across my viewing eyes. The 50 worst decisions made in television. An article posted by Rolling Stone, and it basically goes through the top 50 worst decisions ever made in television. I scrolled through it, and what I thought I would do is I'd start with one. I'm not going to do all 50, of course, because 50, that's a long time. That's a whole show.
Because time.
Yeah, the time thing.
But all I did was from the 50th, I looked at the one that hit my eyes, the first one, and that was number 49. Which was America's Next Top Model asked contestants to swap ethnicities.
What year did that happen in?
It wasn't the 20s, or the 2020s. So it's exactly what it sounds like. In 2005, the contestants were asked to swap ethnicities, which meant that some of the white models wore blackface and others changed their skin tone, wore wigs as if to look like if they were Native American, Hawaiian, or Latinx. This, of course, it says here took place in social media. I think Facebook was probably the only one. We weren't about like what we're on now. This would get a person fired for even.
Oh, for sure.
Oh, this would never happen now. Because also on America's Next Top Model, didn't Tyra Banks put on like a
her talk show. She put on a fat suit.
She put on a fat suit and like existed as a fat person, and like it was supposed to be very
revelatory.
Yeah, and people were like, "Are you Tyra Banks?" No, I'm not. And she, as she says, she has defended the move in recent years. She didn't want to do blackface, but she wanted to see how people would deal with being a degraded race. And I'm like,
is that the term she used? Was it degraded race?
Let's see here. She said, degraded my race. Sorry, degraded my race. But yeah, I'd still just take the L, Tyra. Just take the L. And you know what I'll do is I won't go into big explanation on some of them, but I'll just say this. Don't forget, folks, that the Geico Caveman commercials got their own TV show at one point, got canceled in less than one season. That was pretty cool.
I completely forgot about that.
Yeah.
That's what, in going through this list, how many I was like, I don't remember that happened. But we would love to hear from you of what sticks out to you as really bad TV decisions, either because it was like, ooh, that did not age well, or because the studio or the network lost a ton of money. 844-967-2789. And I think we got Joe from Appleton on the phone.
Hey, Joe.
Hello, lovely people. Greg.
So what do you, good morning. Joe, what do you think is the worst TV decision in history?
I tell you this, my wife and I were very big fans of How I Met Your Mother. I think, and in many ways, it was a spiritual successor to Seinfeld. That's a whole nother discussion.
Oh, but I tell you this, interesting.
It started to wane in later seasons, but most shows do. But then it gets to the last season. They completely changed the setting from New York to some resort in New England. They changed the format, so the whole season, 20-some-odd episodes, takes place over one weekend. And, I mean, that just totally threw off the game, what it had been used to so far. Then they get to the season finale. I'm thinking, all right, this better pay off. And I think with the season finale, or the series finale for How I Met Your Mother, the writers just gathered in a room and said, hey, you know what would be funny? If we did the equivalent of grabbing our audience by their big, dumb faces and screaming, F you! Because they undid everything. They undid everything that they had set up to that point, pulled the rug out from under everybody's feet, and everybody hated it. Now, I can usually go back and watch old shows that kind of fell off and enjoy the good times. But with this, it was so bad, it spoiled the entire series, such that now when I see a rerun come on, all I can think of is, oh, you monsters. The seventh layer of hell is reserved for thee.
Boy, Joe, don't get dramatic or anything.
I get passionate about certain things.
So I have to ask then, because the other show that always pops up for me, the other like missed, like botched endings. I feel like I wasn't a Lost fan, but how Lost ended always gets listed as a terrible ending. And that's on this top 50 list. And then the other one is like the entire season, the entire last season of Game of Thrones. Yeah. So do you have strong feelings about those, Joe?
I never watched Lost. I haven't kept up with Game of Thrones. I do hear that there are some, albeit a small minority, of defenders of the Lost season finale. I've not heard I have not heard one person say How I Met Your Mother ended fine. And if they do meet that person, I know they're an alien.
All right.
Thank you very much,
well,
Joe.
Thanks so much for the call, Joe. But that's what I think is interesting. Greg, did you watch Lost?
I watched the first season. I'm sorry. I watched the first two episodes I was dating a woman at the time. She's like, please just watch Lost with me. I said, all right, I'll watch the pilot. And the pilot was two episodes. And as soon as it was done, I was like, thank you. I'm done with this now.
I'm not interested. Was it like the fantasy stuff or why didn't you get into it?
No interest whatsoever. And here I will say this. My sister is a fervent, diehard defender of everything Lost, to the point where one time I was going to say something about Lost just in like, hey, I watched it, whatever. I wasn't going to criticize it. And she like jumped at me. She was so like, don't you ever say anything bad about Lost or I'll make fun of Doctor Who. I'm like, I wasn't going to make fun of it. I just didn't care. Like there are fervent defenders of that show.
And I loved the show until they ruined it with the end.
With the end.
And even the last season, and it was very confusing and very convoluted to begin with. But the last season was all over the place, and the finale didn't answer so many intrinsic questions that had been part of the series from the beginning. Anybody who knows what smoke monster means will understand what I'm talking about.
Well, here's a question I have for the both of you. Do y'all remember a little show called Cop Rock?
Oh.
I don't.
Yeah.
I have no idea what Cop Rock is. I'll give you a very quick
overview. Legendary show creator Stephen Bochco wanted to make a Hill Street Blues into a Broadway musical. Everyone said no. So he said, you know what? I'm just going to make a cop show where throughout the show there are full dance and singing numbers based on various things that go on in a cop's life. It is so awful. There is a song where a guy sings about how he can get you, how he can kidnap you a child. Like,
what?
Yeah. It's ridiculous. The show was like, basically it got canceled as the first episode was being aired. because they realized how hard they had failed on this one.
So wait, and but it was it Stephen Bochco? I'm reading this right now. So it was it went for like a it was a real hard left turn into
He's like, I just want everyone to dance.
Man, I don't remember that show at all, but that is really funny. We're talking about the worst TV decisions of all time. Could it be shows that were created, shows that were canceled, people that were fired, botched endings? 844-967-2789. We got Carmela from Milwaukee on the phone. Carmela, what is the worst TV decision of all time?
It has to be Game of Thrones.
The ending, the last season?
Yeah, just everything. Bran King, and just a couple episodes before he was named King, he's like, I can hold no titles. And, you know, and then all of a sudden he's like, why do you think I came all this way to be crowned king? It was just so ridiculous the whole last season. There's so many more.
I have to agree with you as far as like the investment of millions of people for well over a basically over a decade, right? Of and like the intricacy and the details for so many seasons, and then like, let's just wrap it up, we're over this. And it's like how the last season felt.
Those two guys should
And I guess they HBO offered to go longer so they could wrap it up, but the showrunners are the ones who decided, no, let's just kind of do it here.
The only good thing about the last season of Game of Thrones was I liked that the youngest daughter killed the Ice King.
But that whole war should have been a whole season.
Whole war could have been a whole season.
And then it did come out of nowhere. They were setting it up that it would most likely be somebody else, probably Jon Snow, and then she came out of nowhere. So I enjoyed that it was her, but at the same time I was still kind of like, what, wait.
The fast development of Daenerys and the Mad Queen, it's like that was like you loved her for like seven seasons until all of a sudden you're supposed to not love her. Like, I totally agree with you, Carmela.
It just made me mad. And like, and then she got that look, and then she just destroyed the whole city, you know, and she's talking about breaking the wheel, and then they turned it, and I was like, no. Every time I do rewatch it, because and it makes me mad every time.
All right, thanks so much for the call, Carmela. I have to agree with you that is up there, especially because there were so many people invested in it that were let down. Let's go to Charles in Green Bay. Charles, what was the worst TV decision of all time?
Putting on Housewives of Anywhere.
Yay! Yay!
Housewives of New York, or Housewives of Dallas, or Housewives of you know, Conan Junction, or Housewives of Poughkeepsie, or whatever. You know, why do we give a damn about their show? Why do we give a darn about what's going on with their life? The other fact of the matter is Keeping Up with the Kardashians. That one should have been canceled before it even got started.
I know Jane agrees with that one.
But the thing is that
I'm sorry, but Jane and I are in the mode of sarcasm today.
Charles, I'm in the mode of sarcasm every day. But you and I and Cindy are going to have to get together and go drinking because I think we'd have a ball.
Go drink it at the Fox Valley, Appleton, Green Bay.
Absolutely.
Thanks for the call, Charles.
Bye.
Oh, Mike, sorry, I couldn't hear. Greg, what were you going to say?
Oh, I was just going to say, I mean, while those are terrible shows, those shows made billions of dollars, so those aren't going anywhere anytime soon.
Quality doesn't necessarily popularity does not equate quality.
Quality, but speaking of billions of dollars and billions of dollars lost,
can we say the same time?
I'm going to say the fact that this is like super, I think it's top 10 on the list, but the fact that NBC canceled Baywatch after the first season.
Talk about
a bad business decision. Yeah. That's on this list. And you think about the millions, if not billions of dollars Baywatch has made since, but the fact that NBC had it for the first season and then we're like, nah,
Well, we're fine. We'll pass. I was going to say my $1 billion thing was when they launched Quibi in 2020.
Oh. What was Quibi?
Exactly.
See, that's the thing. I didn't even want to bring it up because I knew so many people. It was such a failure to launch that, like, I was living in Los Angeles at the time, and I was, like, trying to actively get a meeting with Quibi executives to try to pitch a show, but I was not famous, so they weren't taking anyone who wasn't already famous.
Yeah.
Because they had Chrissy Teigen, like every celebrity had these like 10-minute shows lined up that Quibi was going to be the next big thing.
Oh my God.
And then, and it was basically literally the they were going to launch, the pandemic happened, and TikTok started, and everyone's like, oh, here's a bunch of free content I can get on my phone.
Oh, wow.
Why would I subscribe and pay for 10-minute episodes? And it just literally, what was it, Greg? $1.75 billion.
It started in April and ended in December, the same of 2020. But I was also going to lump that in with CNN Plus, which launched and canceled and went away within a month. I mean, it was crazy how much money was spent on these things, and they're gone.
All right, well, we got to take a break, but 844-967-2789. What are the worst TV decisions of all time? We'll come back with your text and your calls, and we'll also let you know who's at the Laughing Tap this weekend. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
Locally Grown Radio, your home for news, talk, and sports from Rudolph to Nakusa. 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM.
Be a comical one, they'll be standing in lines for those old honky-tonk.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry, along with Jane Matinair and Greg Bach. And we've been talking about the worst TV decisions of all time, according to, we saw this from Rolling Stone printed a piece about this, but we've also been taking your calls and texts on what you think is the worst TV decision of all time.
Charles from Green Bay called back and he wanted to add Fox News parting way with Tucker Carlson.
Is the worst decision of all time?
Well, I mean, certainly.
I disagree with that.
But their ratings took a big hit when he left.
Mm.
But it was great for us.
And it's also, it's just, yeah, the whole landscape. But what would you say as far as what do you, we'll end on this. Do you agree with what number one was on the list?
Let's see here. My computer is not loading well in this article because it's a very long page. Yeah, no, I don't agree with this. While... So number one is NBC cancels Freaks and Geeks. It was a beloved show. It was an underground show. This is not number one to me.
Because I agree with you. Because I think their number two should have been number one.
Yeah, and their number two is NBC turns Donald Trump into a television titan, which, yeah.
Absolutely.
That, I think, has a much more grander impact on the scope of history than Freaks and Geeks getting canceled.
Absolutely. But the one I did notice, number eight, which is HBO, TNT, Showtime, FX, all turned down Breaking Bad.
Wow.
I mean, just have to imagine being the person who says, it's like the person at Decca Records is like, yeah, we don't want the Beatles. We're fine. The guitar rock is going out. It's fine. They won't be anywhere in a year.
We do have a couple texts as well. Mark from the SAC, Fox's cancellation of Firefly. Another one coming in from the 608. Worst TV decision, Fox canceling Firefly before all episodes had aired out of order. Another one for Firefly. And then...
Wow. I need to watch this show. Or maybe not, because I won't be satisfied.
It's a really good show.
And then, fun fact, Sheryl Crow sang a song on Cop Rock. We recently found it on YouTube. I'll have to see if I can find it, and I'll pull it for tomorrow.
Sheryl Crow sang on Cop Rock. Well, some of the other ones I thought were interesting is when Norm MacDonald got fired from SNL, but also David Spade and Chris Farley getting fired from SNL.
Chris Farley, I didn't realize they had fired him.
Yeah, they fired all three of them like in because they were just getting too big, too much money. Chevy Chase gets his own talk show that lasts 6 weeks.
Yeah.
I mean, these are the one that broke my heart the most is the people who played the Ropers on Three's Company got their own spinoff, and there was a thing in their contract saying if the show didn't last a season, they could come back. But when they left, they introduced Don Knotts' character, and the Roper show lasted a year and a half, so when it got canceled, they weren't allowed to come back, and they lost their jobs. Like, that's just some nasty Hollywood stuff, in my opinion.
That's welcome to the entertainment business. Yep. Well, that was super fun. I will link the article from Rolling Stone to today's show notes so you can go check out and see which ones you agree with, which ones you forgot about, and which ones you think should have been on there, or what order. But that was super fun. And also super fun is going to the Laughing Tap.
Yes,
see
it
some
is.
Comedy.
Yeah.
Stab some comedy, right?
Stab comedy. Comedy with you. And if you stab comedy this weekend, you might see Dan Schaefer, because Dan Schaefer told me he's coming to a show this weekend. So,
ooh, yeah, baby. That's so fun.
But we have Louis Katz coming to the Tap for 5 shows, Thursday, 2 Saturday, 2 Friday. Tickets are available, laughingtap.com. Very funny New York comic coming all the way out here. Finally get to see him. Very excited to see him. Jay, we got a clip?
We do.
I had this hippie roommate for a while. Her name was Juggle Sticks. She was super annoying. She insisted everything she bought had to be organic. She actually used, instead of a regular chemical-based deodorant, she used a crystal for deodorant. Anyone heard this before? Yeah? Yeah? You know how it works? Yeah, doesn't, all right? She stunk, right? The crystal didn't summon some kind of bio fairy who magically made her pit smell like rainbows. She was a vegetarian who magically smelled like lamb shawarma, okay? It was disgusting. And it made me hungry. It freaked me out. One day, Juggle Sticks found a cat in the dumpster, brought him home, named him Dave Meowthews.
So, yeah, Louis will be here 5 shows at the Laughing Tap. Thursday to Saturday to Friday, laughingtap.com.
Nice.
Tickets are a steal.
$20, no drink minimum. And then also, if you can't come to those shows, Sunday, Keg Stand-Up returns to Lakefront Brewery. That show is 6:30. There's a full menu before the show. Got 4 great comics from the region, Milwaukee and Chicago comics coming through for the Keg Stand-Up show. Those tickets are available at milwaukeecomedy.com. That's our other company. And then finally, if you love comedy and if you want to meet me how Kristen, Brian, and I met years ago, you can volunteer for the Milwaukee Comedy Festival. We're looking for volunteers right now. Volunteers get to come to shows. It's not a lot of work, just helping out. You might be asked to drive. If you have a car, that'd be great, because we have people doing things like running some errands if we need it. But go to mkecomedyfest.com/volunteers. Also, volunteers link is on the front page of mkecomedyfest.com.
That's an awesome idea, and a great way to meet people and make some friends and check out the comedy scene in Milwaukee. That's terrific.
Yeah.
I would highly, not just because I got a friendship out of it, but as far as volunteer gigs go, you basically collect tickets and you tell people where to go if they're coming into like the Dandy or something like that, because you got to go sneak through the back. And but it is, you get to see a free comedy show, you get to meet new people. It is very fun. I would highly recommend volunteering. It's like, you know, it's like the people who couldn't get a Taylor Swift concert ticket, so then they just got jobs as security guards at stadiums. It's like basically the same thing.
Exactly. With less teenage girls.
Yeah.
So, yes, exactly. We got lots of stuff happening, and come on down, high five, and it'll be awesome.
All right. Well, you know, a little bit of a rough start this today, but we made it through.
Do you
know
why?
We revived.
Because we're professionals.
We are professionals. And specifically, Jane.
Well, and we have a team. We have a team of engineers, and everybody pitches in when things go awry. So, thanks for everybody's help today, including Calvin and everybody. Casper,
thank you,
Corey, and Drew, and Brian, and everyone.
And thank you to everyone at home who let us know that, something's wrong. Because I would have kept just talking, and everyone would have been like, why is there no talking on the air?
Jane and Greg are having a weird conversation.
Yeah, so thank you so much for everyone who called in and texted today. Thank you to Alan Forsick. Thank you, Greg Bach. Thank you, Jane Matinere. We will be back tomorrow at 10 a.m. We got a new public service announcement. Paul Noonan will be here. So yeah, come back tomorrow, 10 a.m. This has been As Goes Wisconsin.
Adoption of teens from foster care is a topic not enough people know about, and we're here to change that. I'm April Dinwiddie, host of the new podcast, Navigating Adoption, presented by Adopt US Kids. Each episode brings you compelling real-life adoption stories told by the families that live them with commentary from experts. Visit adoptuskids.org/podcast or subscribe to Navigating Adoption, presented by Adopt US Kids. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Administration for Children and Families and the Ad Council.
How do you locate a support group, professional association, or local organization? United Way's 211 will provide the answers to these questions and more. 211 is your connection to programs and services in Central Wisconsin. Dial 211 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. In this ever-changing world, it is often hard to find the program or service you're looking for. United Way's 211 can assist you locating services. 211 is free and confidential. Trained referral specialists will help you get connected 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Dial 211. Every day, people begin a difficult and sometimes desperate search for programs that can provide assistance. United Way's 211 is there to connect you to the programs and services you need. For non-emergency information and referral services, call United Way's 211 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Dial 211. With thousands of programs in the database, they can assist you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Dial 211.
Emergency medical unit, respond to 102 Maple Avenue, possible stroke victim.
When stroke occurs, you have 60 minutes to win or lose the race of your life. There are new treatments, but you must get to a hospital fast. If you suddenly feel weakness on one side, have trouble speaking, walking, or seeing, it could be a stroke. Call 911. Get to a hospital. Because how you spend the next 60 minutes could determine how you spend the rest of your life. Stroke. Know the signs. Act in time. A message from the National Institute of Neurological Disorders and Stroke.
Love your hometown? Don't miss the Devil's Advocates radio show on the road for the very first Fall in Love Hometown Tour 2023.
But we're coming to a town near you, all across the state of Wisconsin.
Mike and Dom kicking it all off in Wausau this Thursday starting at 4 p.m. Live from Bull Falls Radio, WXCO, 1230 AM, 98.9 FM.
Road trip!
With the Devil's Advocates Fall in Love Hometown Tour 2023 on your local Civic Media radio station and the app.
Are you looking for more in this world? Are you ready for something bigger? Then we are looking for you. The big-hearted, the bold, the messy, and the gutsy. The teachers, the growers, the builders, the skilled, the sharers, the change makers. We need you. We are the Peace Corps. In more than 60 countries, we go all in and all out. We are volunteers, partners, communities, working together, living together, bringing our experience, passion, and joy to building a better world together. From tackling climate change in Mexico to keeping kids healthy in Kenya, from sustainable farming in the Philippines to education in Kosovo. We learn more, give more, share freely, and serve boldly. Are you ready to tackle the tough stuff? To go the distance to make a difference? Then we have a place where you belong. Join us at peacecorps.gov.
WFHR, Wisconsin Rapids, 1320 AM and W248DE, broadcasting at 97.5 FM.
Your hometown news talk and sports station is locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Tom Foti in Washington. Contracts between the major U.S. car makers and the United Auto Workers run out in less than 24 hours.
We've repeatedly told the companies from day one, September 14th is a deadline, not a reference point. We will not allow the Big Three to continue dragging out negotiations for months.
Auto Worker Union President Sean Fain. The White House says the Biden administration will appeal another federal court ruling holding DACA, deferred action for childhood arrivals, unlawful. That affects undocumented immigrants brought here as children. Near Philadelphia, the end of a two-week-long prison escape drama.
Escaped killer Danilo Cavalcante's dramatic capture lifted a heavy cloud across Pennsylvania.
I just wanted to be able to see him get